everyone. This is the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, and we have a lot to talk about. First of all, this coming week, we'll see the G20 world leaders meeting in London. The protesters have already gotten there before the leaders. We'll talk about that protest in London. Protests across Europe, including some that will meet Barack Obama, who will be at the G20, and also he's going to be visiting Prague, where the neocon government just fell because of a vote of no confidence brought about by the Socialist and Communist parties of the Czech Republic. Yes, the Communist Party. Don't rule them out. Many of them are still sitting back there kind of laughing and saying, now you've seen your capitalism. What do you think about it? People out of work. Over 20% unemployment in some countries, including this country. It's much higher than these statisticians, these political animals, hybrids, whatever you want to call them. They cook the books on statistics. The unemployment in this country is much higher than the Bureau of Labor Statistics is mentioning. The only people that ought to be unemployed in this country are bankers, first of all. Clergymen, I would like to see them unemployed, especially those televangelists. Anyway, we can talk about that. And we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the trial of Deborah Jean Palfrey, otherwise known as DC Madam. I want to talk about that. 1 year later, what she tried to say, what the mainstream media did not say, how they ignored what she was trying to say. So we'll talk about that. And Israel launched an attack on Sudan earlier this year. Now, they're not coming clean with this by any stretch, but when Israel launches these out-of-area attacks, usually they don't have much ground to stand on. They have even less ground to stand on an attack on a convoy in eastern Sudan. The LA Times reported that hundreds of Sudanese and Ethiopian and other refugees from other parts of the continent of Africa were killed in this Israeli attack. Israel is putting out the word that they interdicted an arms supply to Gaza. What they interdicted, apparently, was a group of refugees, because Israel took in some refugees from Darfur over the past year. That word gets around Africa pretty fast. Obviously, these refugees thought that Israel would be a good place to go since they opened their doors to others. So how did Israel respond to the refugee crisis? They killed the refugees. They killed them because, of course, the chosen people think that they're much better than the brown skin and the black skin people of this world, and that's what the meeting in Durban, South Africa, is going to be talking about. That's why Israel's putting pressure on the United States and Europe to boycott it, because one of the things they're going to talk about are people who go around saying they're much better than everyone else, that they're God's chosen people. That kind of thinking needs to be relegated to the ancient texts. It should be read in museums. It should not be practiced in any house of worship anywhere on this planet, or any other planet for that matter. We can talk about that in more detail as well. We've got the economy in real trouble. There's the bailout package, all this kind of stuff, but it's not going to do much good, and we will be back right after this short break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, Saturday Roundup with news and your phone calls. And if you'd like to call into the program, the toll-free number is 800-313-9443. That's 800 313-9443. Reuters is reporting that the demonstrations against the G20, against capitalism, against bankers, against all that we see is happening to the global economy, protests have already started across Europe. This is Dateline from London and Berlin. This evening, tens of thousands of people marched in capital cities across Europe on Saturday. That's today, to protest about the economic crisis and urge world leaders to act on poverty, jobs, and climate change. Chanting, tax the rich, make them pay, protesters marched through London waving banners saying people before profit. I would add that there's other banners in a way that say hang the bankers. I actually kind of like those banners a little bit better. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden said the protesters should, quote, give us a chance and listen to what politicians plan to do. Joe, shut up. You don't know what you're doing. You come from a state, Delaware, that has more corporate headquarters there just to hide behind your Delaware secrecy laws. Joe, you don't have a dog in this fight. Be quiet. Shut up. Go away. You're the guy who voted for this bankruptcy law that basically screwed those who were trying to declare bankruptcy, who couldn't, who fell behind in their payments. Joe Biden, you're the last person that ought to be lecturing anyone protesting a system that your bloody state of Delaware helped create because of its corporate secrecy, banking secrecy, and all the other contrivances that exist in your hometown of Wilmington. So put a sock in it, Joe. We don't want to hear you anymore. You worry about your Chia Pet hair plugs and the caps that keep falling out of your mouth, we'll just leave it at that. In Britain, getting back to the Reuters article, in Britain, trade unions, aid agencies, religious groups, and environmentalists joined together under the slogan, put people first. Yes, Joe Biden, put people first, not corporations, most of which in this country are headquartered in your state of Delaware, which I think is only exists because Delaware is the U.S. version now of the Isle of Man, Guernsey, Jersey, Liechtenstein, and the Cayman Islands. Joe Biden only has a Senate seat because somebody decided it would be better to keep Delaware separated than make it a county of Pennsylvania, which it really should be. So there we go. There we go. Joe Biden doesn't like the protesters. Well, Joe, the protesters don't like you, to be perfectly honest about it all. Let's listen to this report about some of the funny ways the protesters are getting back at the bankers in London, including putting out a fake copy of the Financial Times. If we can listen to this news clip from Britain.
The morning delivery of the Financial Times to the newspaper's London headquarters came with a difference. Spoof copies of the famous pink-coloured journal were put together by anti-capitalism campaigners. They hope to provoke public debate ahead of next week's crucial meeting of G20 leaders in the city. This is one of the prank's architects, who has concealed his identity.
It's a criticism of how we're living and what we're failing to do to make good on the promises that our leaders make to us about what they're going to do for us. We have to make them stick to their promises and actually deliver the kind of world that we want to live in.
Volunteers handed out the 12-page paper to commuters at London's Waterloo Station. Organisers said they gave away thousands. The project cost less than $14,000 and was partly funded by internet donations. A series of demonstrations in London are planned to coincide with the G20 summit. Professor Chris Knight has organised next Wednesday's G20 Meltdown Financial Fool's Day protests. He's been suspended by the University of East London for allegedly inciting violence against bankers. But Knight remains defiant.
We're not going to be eating a banker. We're not going to be burning a banker. We're not going to be hanging a banker. The whole point of having an effigy is to let us hang or burn or eat the effigy. It's humour. But if we're not allowed to laugh, of course, it gets a bit different and it can get nastier.
Knight has pledged to target businesses in the city which failed to switch off their lights on Saturday. On the same day, a trade union-backed march has been organised in central London. Wednesday's planned demonstrations have worried city firms. Bankers have been blamed by many for precipitating the financial crisis. Many have been warned by their bosses to dress down. A massive police presence is expected amid fears that levels of anger among activists are running dangerously high.
Well, there you have it. And one of the things that's being reported is that the London police, remember, there was a time when London bobbies were unarmed, and now they're armed to the teeth. And they also have their latest toy, of course, the taser. And they're putting the word out that they intend to use the tasers against the protesters at the G20 summit. You know, the cops, for the most part, they know, they've chosen the sides. They're on the sides of the bankers, the ruling class. And you know what? When the people rise up, I have some bad news for the cops. Those tasers may be put where the sun doesn't shine, and I wonder how you're going to like it when you're shocked in that part of your anatomy. It's going to be, I think, kind of funny to see the dance, the new dance steps that you're able to perform with one of those things up your keisters. It's beyond law and order now. The laws have been broken by the elites, by the oligarchs, by the bankers, and if the cops want to defend them, the cops are going to pay the price, I'm afraid. But this is an old story going back to the Roman centurions, the knights of feudal Europe, and the cops are just the modern-day knights. They're the modern-day Roman centurions. And you don't, the only place you see any remnants of the centurions and the feudal knights are in museums, and that's, I'm afraid, where you're going to see the blue uniforms and the police badges and their nice little taser toys one of these days in museums. And again, if you'd like to call the program this evening, the toll-free number is 800-313-9443. We're talking also about this coming summer. Many in Britain are talking about it being a summer of rage. The pathetic Prime Minister of Britain, Gordon Brown, who's hosting this G20 conference, he says he understands people's concerns. Yeah, is that why he bailed out the Royal Bank of Scotland and Northern Rock and all these? I mean, it hit Britain in many cases before it hit here, this economic meltdown. Now we got George Soros claiming, oh, there's going to be an economic meltdown. You know, George Soros is kind of like the guy, the arsonist, who sets fire to an old warehouse, and he's the first guy to call the fire department, you know, saying there's a fire. I mean, George Soros is not a disinterested party in what's going on. He has shorted currencies. He has caused massive unemployment in certain countries. He attacked the British pound in the early 90s. He tried to undercut the British pound. And yet he's always showing his face at these conferences. He's always in Washington testifying. He was a big campaign contributor to Barack Obama. Barack Obama should denounce George Soros, but he won't do it because, you know, he's into him for quite a bit of money. But people like Soros, they're as pathetic as Joe Biden talking about give us a chance. Joe Biden has been in the damn Senate since the mid-1970s, and what have we seen happen under Joe Biden's watch? Trust the politicians? Joe, while you were in the Senate, we had Iran-Contra. We had the last part of Watergate. We had the savings and loan debacle. We had BCCI. We had Enron. We had a stolen election in 2000 and another one in 2004. And Joe Biden, you've been there since the early 70s. You're telling us to trust people like you? What are you, nuts? Are you crazy? And Joe, you're the last person anyone's going to trust because you've been there so long. You're so tainted by the system that you've been part of. Nobody's going to trust you above many others. I mean, there's probably a few others I would trust even less in the Senate. Some of those extreme right wing yahoos, for example, like David the Diaper Man Vitter from Louisiana. But Joe, you know, coming from Delaware, don't be talking about give you a chance and give the system that you've been part of for all these many years a chance, because you've blown it. The system is broken. The system's corrupt, and the system needs to be overthrown and replaced by something else. And it certainly isn't going to look like anything in the corporate business Department of Business Regulations in Dover, Delaware. That's got to end. this opaqueness in regulation of corporations, which Delaware has turned into a major industry, that has got to go. And if that has to go, and Delaware has to go, and Joe, your state has to go along with it, so be it. That's the way it's going to be. Delaware would make a fine county of Pennsylvania, or I don't know if New Jersey would want them. Maryland could take them, or we could create a new state called Delmarva, which could be Delaware, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, that little tip of Virginia. We could have another state called Delmarva. And therefore, Joe, you might lose your political base, and your son, who's the Attorney General of Delaware, may not have much of a political future in the new state of Delmarva when we extricate that whole area from the corporations that use it to hide all their nefarious deeds and activities. And that's been the case with Delaware for quite a number of years. And Joe Biden is the last person, the very last person who should be talking about give us a chance, give the system a chance. He is the system, and the system needs to go. Anyway, we will be right back with hopefully your phone calls and other comments and news after this short break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report, the Saturday roundup of news and views coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. And as I was mentioning, we've got the G20. It's interesting what President Lula of Brazil had to say about the G20, and he will be at the G20 meeting. Of course, it's becoming these meeting of world financial leaders is beginning to become a lot less. A lot less white and European. We've got now Lula from Brazil. We've got the leaders of India. We've got the Chinese and what used to be, except for Japan, a largely Western conclave of the first the G7, and then when Russia was added, the G8. And Lula said something very interesting. He said it wasn't the people from countries like Brazil that plunged the world into this global disaster. It was they were blonde-haired, blue-eyed people, referring obviously to the Europeans, the Canadians, the Americans, and the other vestiges of European colonialism around the world. And he's right. He's right. This wasn't Brazil's doing. This wasn't Argentina's. This wasn't South Africa's or Turkey's doing. This was the doing of the City of London, the bankers in Switzerland, and then the bankers in New York, and the regulators in Washington, and greedy people in many those nations and cities and many others like it. So Lula was absolutely right when he said unfortunately, the whole world has to pay for the action of those blonde-haired, blue-eyed bankers and political leaders. Anyway, let's go to the phones. We've got Kathy calling in from Louisiana. Are you with us?
Yes, Wayne. How are you doing?
Oh, good. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, I just wanted to talk to you, see how you were doing. I had a question for you. I had earlier heard you mention Deborah Jean Palfrey. Excuse me, and I wanted to know if you had any more up-to-date information on her. I think I had read at one point that even though months and months had passed since she had died, that the case was still considered open by investigators. Is that true?
It is in a way. The thing that everyone forgets about with Jean Palfrey is what she tried to say at her trial, which was this time last year, of course. At her trial, she tried to invoke something called the Classified Information Procedures Act. Now, that is something that was put in place largely because of Iran-Contra. Oliver North and John Poindexter, two of the major players in Iran-Contra, try to say, look, we want to introduce classified information at our trial, and that was just, that's something called gray mail. We've got, you know, blackmail, and what they, it was gray mail. It was kind of in between. They were saying, look, if you don't drop the case against us, we may have to just expose classified information in an open setting in a courtroom. And so the Classified Information Procedures Act was passed to try to handle these situations. Gene Palfrey, and most people that try to invoke it are, you know, are people who have been involved in some sort of classified work for the government. Gene Palfrey said she wanted to invoke the Classified Information Procedures Act so she could talk about some things that were obviously classified. What does that say about what she was doing? Jack Anderson, years ago, in the 1980s, talked about how the CIA, actually in 75, he talked about how the CIA was using prostitutes to blackmail diplomats, mostly Soviet diplomats, but we don't know if it ended there, that the CIA used male and females in New York and in San Francisco and obviously here in Washington. So I always felt from talking to Jean that she had been working as a contract employee for the CIA and obviously some other outfits like Dick Cheney's Halliburton in potentially steering her employees to certain customers for purposes of collecting intelligence or possibly blackmail, although I can't prove that. So that was lost in the trial. Gene Palfrey was just rolled over by a judicial system that did not want to do anything to expose the network that she was involved with, and I'm quite certain, after talking to her and her legal advisors, that that network included the Central Intelligence Agency, which is a nice segue into the other thing that happened here last Sunday. We have another CIA officer, a guy named William Bennett, who was brutally beaten. His body was found out in a very very upscale area in Northern Virginia, Lansdowne. There were white bands seen in the area days before the beating. His wife is in critical condition. She was beaten too, almost, you know, basically left for dead. She's in a coma, can't speak. But anyway, white vans were seen in the area. One of the white vans, Florida tags, and anyone who's read my stuff over the past several years knows that Florida tags and white vans were seen all over the United States and in sensitive areas, some of these places, in the months before 9/11, and they were occupied by so-called Israeli art students who were casing neighborhoods, just like there was a report on out from Loudoun County where William Bennett was found dead, that there were magazine salesmen going door to door, driving these white, you know, in this one case, a white van. Very suspicious. But we'll be back, Kathy. Hold on, right after this short break. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday roundup here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And we have Kathy on the line with us from Louisiana. Are you still with us?
Yes, Wayne, I am.
Okay, yes. We have another suspicious death of a CIA person, this time in suburban Washington. We, of course, had the Roland Carnaby situation where he was shot to death in broad daylight and on live television. That was last April, almost a year ago to this current time.
Well, this also reminds me of the that DEA supervisory agent from Houston that was murdered in New Orleans last August.
I think his name was Burns. Yes, he was in
Thomas. He was attending a conference on organized crime in New Orleans, and he had been abducted, and his body was found beaten on a street very far from his hotel, and he was beaten so badly he died from his injuries. A few days later, I thought about that case. You know, I just think that it's very similar to the one up in Lansdowne.
Yes. Well, I mean, the thing is if this government cannot even protect its you know, people who work in you know, covert jobs, either for the Drug Enforcement Administration. Let's face it. I talked to DEA agents, and you know, they have been in very critical positions overseas, very dangerous positions, where they find out that every time they try to make a drug bust somewhere, the local CIA station chief has already tipped off the drug people, and they're out of the area. This was the case certainly in Burma. It was a case, and it's been the case in places like Colombia and other places in Latin America. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, there was a class action suit brought by several DEA agents who claimed that their operations had been basically blown by the local CIA. And then on the other hand, you've got people in the CIA who are doing, in like Valerie Plame Wilson, doing things that are very legitimate, who find themselves being outed by the White House. Now we have a guy who's this guy William Bennett he's a retired Green Beret. So whoever took him down and went after his wife, it's quite clear there had to be more than a couple people involved with that. And now we find out that they only were able to ID him through fingerprints because he had recently applied for a Virginia concealed weapons permit. So there was some reason he must have had the fear for his safety by asking for a concealed gun permit in Virginia. The CIA, so far, the CIA will only admit that he left there as a contractor in 2000, but the CIA is never an agency to admit who their people are and what they've been doing. And we obviously have another example of that. But yeah, it has a lot of similarities to the Burn DEA, the Burn case.
Right, but I mean, because I've lived in Louisiana, and I know that there is a lot of violent crime in New Orleans. However, if they tried to make it out to be a mugging, but if someone were just to mug him, if that was the purpose of it, they wouldn't have taken the time to beat him that severely, abduct him, and drop his body off somewhere else. They would have just either shot him or done the damage necessary to take his wallet and leave.
Right, and there's going to be a memorial walk tomorrow at 5:30 a.m. from where he and his wife started last Sunday morning. Apparently, their routine, and it, you know, people who work in covert operations, they're always told don't establish a routine. But I guess he figured since he was with his wife, there's safety in two people rather than just walking alone. Although it didn't help them, but there's going to be a memorial walk to retrace their walk from last Sunday at 5:30 in the morning, and I will be covering that because I have a funny feeling that the neighbors, and there are reports in the local newspapers, none of this is making national news, which shouldn't surprise anyone. They're more interested in Eric Cantor, a really awful congressman from here in Virginia, who attended a Britney Spears concert. That gets news, but a CIA person and his wife get brutally assaulted, and it hardly makes the national news. But that's why newspapers are going out of business all over the country, not because people aren't interested in the news. They're not interested in the kind of news, so-called news, they're trying to put out there. But there's going to be this memorial walk, and hopefully I'll be able to talk to some of the neighbors and friends. He was very reclusive, by the way, which indicates that he was probably still in some sort of covert status with the CIA. He, for example, he would get his mail by apparently opening up the garage door, running out to the mailbox, and then running back into the garage and closing the door behind him. Again, but that tells me that, you know, if he was concerned about that routine, perhaps, that somebody would know that he comes out at a certain time to get his mail. So it seems to me that he was very careful in some respects, but I guess he just got a little sloppy with this morning walk routine, and unfortunately he paid for it. But I think the important thing is to find out. The Loudoun County Sheriff, they want to find out what he actually did at the CIA. They've been at the CIA apparently asking questions. You know, good luck them trying to get any information from that agency. But I guess we'll have to find out. And hopefully tomorrow when I join these people for this very early morning walk, I'll be able to find out some more information about what Mr. Bennett did and why he may have been murdered. It certainly seems like it's connected. The police are saying that. The sheriff is saying that. It certainly looks like the possibility that he was targeted. Perhaps his wife was targeted. All we know about his wife is that she works for the Capitol of the United States, which means that she's not working for any Senate or House staff or member of Congress. She's working for the Capitol infrastructure in some capacity. That's all we know. That's all that's been reported. But anyway, I have a feeling there's much more to this Bennett murder than has been reported so far.
What I thought was interesting was that at least at this time they admitted that Bennett had worked for the CIA, whereas in the case of Roland Carnaby, they didn't even admit to that.
Right, yeah, they pick and choose, it seems, very carefully who they admit works for them and who doesn't. And, of course, they're saying that Bennett left their employment in 2000. Well, if that's the case, why did he? Why did his actions indicate that he may have still worked for them? And this 5 o'clock morning routine of a walk, where he lives is probably in traffic out there. Say he completed his walk at 6 or 6:30. It could take him longer than an hour, maybe an hour and a half in that traffic from that part of Northern Virginia to make it into Langley. So that kind of makes sense. And his wife working at Capitol Hill would take her even longer. So getting up to do a morning walk at that hour. Both of them were ex-military, ex-U.S. Army, obviously into a routine. So I don't find the early morning rise to be all that unusual. But now that we do also know that there was a commotion that got a neighbor to call having to do with a white man, and apparently doors were being closed and opened in the white van prior to his body being found and his wife, the critically injured wife, being found. So this is one of these stories that, I think there's certain people who like to relegate it to the back pages, to the metro section of the newspaper, but I find that in almost every case when I've investigated a story like this, there's much more to it than what the mainstream media, in this case, it hardly even reported. It's pretty disgusting, really.
Yeah, those the white vans with the Florida license plates. That definitely sounds like Israeli art students. However, they've just chosen to use selling magazines as their cover now. That was my initial reaction.
Yeah, the MO on these magazine, apparently these magazine salespeople, they're very aggressive, just like the Israeli art students were very aggressive. The Israeli art students targeted the homes of federal agents, law enforcement agents, FBI agents, even a U.S. judge. I believe that was in Louisiana, and they were casing military bases, in federal buildings, office buildings, very aggressive. And you know what? When they got arrested or detained, the stupid U.S. government lets them go. There is a plague of these Israelis in this country. They work in mall kiosks. They're very aggressive there. Many of these kiosks are located in malls near sensitive military installations. Now we've got these magazine. Now, some of these people, the magazine sales people, the college-age students, high school-age students, they've got, they don't have Israeli names, but we don't know who's running them. Apparently, the people running them are pretty unscrupulous businessmen and very arrogant and very aggressive, so it's quite possible the Mossad has changed their MO, and they're maybe using American kids now to go out and case these joints. But I can tell you, in this part of Virginia where these magazine people and the white man were found, you don't go door-to-door there. These are gated communities, highly secure. Even homes that are not in a gated community have security systems, and it just that area does not lend itself to door-to-door sales. We're not talking about Philadelphia or Baltimore row houses here. We're talking about gated communities where you've got a lot of people work in the CIA and members of Congress live out in that area, and they have tight security, and anything that's untoward in the area is going to be reported. So why were these white vans in the area, and why was there one from Florida? Because many of the white vans associated with those Israeli art students had Florida tags. Where were they from in Florida? Well, that area that goes from from Boca Raton all the way down past Miami to Coral Gables. That is Israeli mob territory. Only beaten by Brighton Beach in Brooklyn, New York. That is the center, one of the centers for the Russian-Israeli mafia. So my radar is up on this case, and certainly I think there's much more we're going to hear about it.
No, I hope so. I've been looking on the internet trying to find more information about this couple, but I can't really find anything. There's very little information on them.
Yes, I mean, and I think that lends. I mean, it was just like Bowery Plain Wilson. If you looked her up, you saw that she was an energy consultant for Brewster Jennings. There was no indication she was in any way affiliated with the CIA before she was outed. And this could be a similar situation with the late Mr. Bennett. He may have had a covert identity. We don't know how often he traveled, but these are all questions that I'll be posing to his relatives, who don't know an awful lot about him either. They said they saw him here and there, but very reclusive. But I'm sure there's some information that can still be obtained from some of the neighbors. Of course, they're very concerned. But I think this looks to be a targeted hit. The question is, why was this man and his wife targeted? And I think that's the question that I want to try to have answered when I head out there for that dark 30 in the morning walk tomorrow.
Well, what I'm hoping is that, you know, this particular incident, they screwed up on it so bad. I'm hoping that more people will start looking into the – I'm hoping the white van connection will make people start looking at Israeli art students even more, because it could lead to other things. So that's something that I hope for.
Right. Hey, Kathy, if you can hold on. We've got another caller holding on. We just bring him on and see what he has to say. We can bring him on. Paul is calling from Montreal, Canada. Can we bring Paul in on our conversation here?
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello there. Listen, I was enjoying your conversation, but I'm not sure I'm within the same topic.
Yes, go ahead. We can go off topic here. No problem.
You touched down about the Israel attack on Sudan earlier on.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that really caught my attention.
Yes.
That's quite something to find out that Israel is so open about, letting know that it's attacking a foreign country. Because I'm sure you're aware that the United States have been quite heavily involved in all the different wars going on over there.
Oh, absolutely! Yes, we're very much involved in what's going on in Sudan. Basically, using the Chad side of the border from Darfur to basically arm some of those Darfur guerrillas. We only hear about Sudan. We never hear about the. What the United States is doing, and it all has to do with
petrol
oil.
The United States is doing. You know, when you think of everything that the United States is doing over there, you know, it pales in comparison with 9/11. I go as far as to say that, you know, the number of deaths that they've engendered on me, in any case, I've been spending some time with an investigative journalist that has done quite a bit of work over there.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you knew about him. His name is Keith Armand Snow.
Oh, yes, I know Keith. Yes,
I know him.
Yes. Absolutely, yes, yes.
Well,
he's done some very good work over in Rwanda and Eastern Congo.
And Sudan and Djibouti and all these places.
Yes.
So I meant to let you know about that, and I'll leave you with this and let you go at your conversation.
Oh, yes. Well, thanks for calling in. Okay, yes.
My pleasure.
Okay. Yes, and Kathy, are you still on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, yes. Sudan, we have an Israeli attack on Sudan. Now we have the Americans saying that 40 people were killed, but the Sudanese sources told the LA Times, and the LA Times reported this, that hundreds of people, potentially hundreds, as many as 800 were killed, and these were refugees from Sudan, Ethiopia, and other African countries who were on their way to Israel because Israel had previously let some Darfur refugees in. When that word gets out, obviously you're going to get a lot of people saying, hey, let's go to the promised land, you know? I mean, it's been a case of crossing that Red Sea ever since Moses did it. So Israel responds to this. They don't want the refugees, so they go launch an air attack to kill 800 of them. I mean, it's just defies logic what this country is, and this country of Israel. Sometimes I guess you can use our country and their country interchangeably, especially if you're at an AIPAC conference here in Washington. But these out of area attacks by Israel are usually pretty nefarious, like the attack on Syria, where they had no real evidence that there was anything going on as far as nuclear weapons in Syria, but they hit that site anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just surprised that we haven't heard about this attack on those Sudanese refugees before.
Well, it's just
brazen.
It's brazen. And that's the Olmert government, and that's supposed to be the moderate Israeli government, the one that's leaving. This, of course, is the moderate Israeli government that attacked Gaza. Anyway, we have a short break here. We will be right back after this short break. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report, Saturday Night Roundup.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report, the Saturday Roundup. And before we break, I just want to play this short clip of Jean Palfrey at a news conference when she decided to release her phone records, which the Justice Department never got a hold of. On there, of course, we found the names of Louisiana Republican Senator David Vitter, Assistant Secretary of State Randall Tobias, and the brother of the Chief of Naval Operations, the guy in charge of the U.S. Navy. Listen to Jean Palfrey and tell me that this is your run-of-the-mill person who would run such an operation, or if she might actually have had some other kinds of top-level connections, if we can play this.
Nonetheless, the decision ultimately was made to hand over the records to a responsible media outlet, in this case, ABC News in New York, without compensation and or promises or guarantees of any sort. Even though ABC News is under no obligation whatsoever to me, I do expect their reporting to help identify potential witnesses for my defense. For me, this is an absolute necessity, since the government has placed me in the untenable position whereby I do not have sufficient money to undertake this extraordinarily expensive task. Consequently, I would ask the press and the media to put aside the titillation of the who's who's list, at least in part, and instead investigate the disturbing genesis, the confounding evolution, and the equally alarming continuation of this matter. I believe there
well,
is
there
something
you have
very...
It. There you have it. The continuation of the matter was to shut... Somebody wanted to shut her operation down. She got too close. She knew too much. And she, unfortunately, is no longer with us. Supposedly committed suicide. I never bought it. But, Kathy, you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you.
Oh, okay. Let's go to Marilyn, who's holding on from California real quick before we have to break for this evening. Marilyn, are you there?
Yeah, I've been sort of watching how, you know, the United States and its proxy Israel and other countries are sort of taking over Africa and subjugating, you know, Rhodesia, and now Zimbabwe was a prime target.
Right.
One thing I found interesting was last week there was a story out that now the Pope is going all over Africa. Now, this country, Africa was formerly missionaries that were Christian missionaries went there, and there were many Christians there, and now you have the Pope going around to each country and saying some very interesting things. He's decrying evil, he says. But
oh, well, that's a tough one. I'm glad he's got off the fence on that.
Oh, okay. Well, I had a different take on it, but I just thought that it was interesting that now they're letting him in. He seems to be able to go in under, you know, no matter where and get away with it, whereas nobody else can. You know, I know missionaries, like from our church, and we have missionaries there, and they're in danger all the time. And
The
Catholic Church first went in is when all of the violence started happening in Africa. So I thought
absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anyway, I think that's interesting that once we take over, we let the Catholic Church come in and do whatever and we can reconvert the people, quote unquote, to the church, which is not everybody's church.
Right. Notice that the Pope went to two oil-producing countries, Cameroon and Angola. I would say that the Vatican has more than a vested interest in just
social matters.
Anyway, thanks, Kathy, for joining us from Louisiana. And that'll do it for this week with the Waymass Report Saturday Roundup. And we'll be with you this time next week with hopefully more information and news about what's going on in our country and in the world. Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll